Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined in, well, I guess it makes sense that she'd be in my house. She's my wife. Some introduction. Jen is Dr. Jennifer Irwin, with all the titles, is in the house. I'm talking to her because the Lakers are falling like flies. Brandon Ingram is dealing with blood clots, which is legitimately scary stuff. Lonzo Ball, it looks like the doctors looked at his ankle and have essentially eliminated him from returning or said that he's not going to return. So I'm going to talk to Jen about both Brandon Ingram's situation, how it differs from Chris Bosh, because a lot of people made that comparison right away. Those same blood clots essentially ended his career. He hasn't officially retired, but he's essentially retired. So we're going to talk about that, and then because it is a Monday show, I'm going to answer a few questions. What I'm probably going to do, because we got so many, is break this up into a two-part mailbag episode. So I'm going to do half of the questions today, and the other half I'm going to do for Wednesday's show with Pete. So if you guys have questions for Pete, then leave them in the form of a five-star review, and we will get to those for Wednesday's show. Let's dive into this thing, though. So first off, I did a lot of talking. That was a minute and a half of me talking before I introduced you and thanked you for coming on. Jen, How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
We just bought a TV.
We did. You're so happy.
I am. So let's start here. The Ingram injury to me is more serious. Athletes sprain ankles.
Right.
This is a legitimately, had they not caught this in time and had that dislodged, it could have killed him.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. We could have been dealing with what happened with Chris Bosh, for sure.
Well, Chris Bosh, did it dislodge? I don't believe it ever did.
He had pulmonary embolism, right?
I don't believe so. It doesn't matter. The big reason people keep bringing up Chris Bosh is that he legitimately retired. His career ended short because of this kind of situation. One, where does this, like, how does this happen? Is it a congenital thing? It's wild that a 22-year-old athlete in really good shape is dealing with blood clots.
Right. So usually when you see blood clots, it's usually in the older population. So, you know, with the patients that I treat who are usually 50 and above, we worry about DVTs more with that population, especially people who have had surgery, who are bedbound, who don't have a lot of mobility throughout the day. With the lack of blood flow from that, that's what puts people at risk for DVTs. It's extremely rare in athletes because they're usually very healthy. We usually don't worry about immobility with athletes, and therefore we don't worry.
Unless it's LeBron on defense. I mean, then you might have to worry a little bit.
Yeah. So when you hear something like this about an athlete developing a DVT, you usually resort to, okay, was there something going on with family history? Mm-hmm. I don't know what his family history is, but that's where my mind went to right away, because he's way too young to develop the standard DVT that we see in the older population.
Yeah, it's really concerning. And the big question I guess everybody jumps to immediately is, how likely is this to come back? Is this going to be something he's going to have to deal with a lot? He's probably already on those blood thinners.
Right.
That makes it so that he can't play. He can't overexert himself while he's on those blood thinners.
Right.
So that they're probably already working on it and trying to get that blood clot as small as possible and deal with it. They haven't done surgery, so I don't think it was something that they felt the dire need to jump in there and take care of right away. But is this something that he's going to have to deal with moving forward?
Yeah, so once somebody develops a DVT, regardless of age or any other comorbidities that they have, there is a higher risk of it developing again versus somebody who's never had one before. Mm-hmm. So he's going to have to, you know, mark that in his medical history for the rest of his life. There's a good chance that he will be on blood thinners for the rest of his life, whether it's a high dose of a blood thinner or, you know, your standard low dose baby aspirin, right? He's going to be on, likely he will be on something for the rest of his life. Mm-hmm. I was doing some more research on treatment of these blood clots, and actually surgery, from what I've read, is becoming less of an occurrence.
Yeah.
With these blood clots, they've developed medication that actually you take that breaks up the blood clots, mm-hmm. where you don't have to go under the knife, which is good because it's less invasive.
Yeah. Well, speaking of invasive surgeries, what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick second here, and we're going to pay a couple bills. I have to pay for that TV.
Yes.
and then when we come back, I want to talk about Lonzo Ball. And to this point, avoiding surgery, you and I were talking a little bit before we went live on the benefits and the different approaches that they could be taking with Lonzo. So hang tight. When we come back, we'll be talking about Lonzo Ball's ankle. And we're back. We are back to talk about Lonzo Ball's ankle. He saw the doctors over the weekend. You kind of figured, based on the way that the updates had been coming with Lonzo, one, it being a grade 3 ankle sprain, you and I, the first thing that you said, remember, when I told you he had a grade 3 ankle sprain was, wow, no surgery. They aren't doing surgery. So we're going to talk about that difference in approach, for, you know, going under the knife, and approaching it more from keeping everything intact, I guess, not introducing hardware, as you put it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing that we said here was they said 4 to 6 weeks
mm-hmm.
was going to be a time frame for return. Pete and I have talked extensively about the way that they're releasing information on those injuries. I don't think it's very good. The problem is when you say 4 to 6 weeks, people are now going to mark that in their minds, right?
Right.
And that was never realistic.
No.
With a grade 3 ankle sprain, that's a good 3-monther.
Yeah, 4 to 6 weeks is usually what we put on people who have just a standard grade 1 ankle sprain, where you tweak your ankle a little bit, tie your shoes up a little bit tighter, and keep playing.
Mm-hmm.
When you hear grade 3, that is a ligament that has completely torn or is barely hanging on by a thread even be considered a ligament anymore.
It basically, what I in my own research and looking for it, it was basically like 75% or more has detached or something like
that. Right, it's basically no longer acting as a, it's not performing its function. The ligament is meant for stability. And at that point, that ligament is no longer providing enough stability to that joint when it becomes a grade 3.
It's like when I add a hole to the very, very end of a belt. Like, I'm now risking that belt just blowing wide open on me.
And losing all of its stability, yes.
So I want to ask you, though, about Lonzo Ball, the approach, not going under the knife. And the way I'll phrase this is basically, is there a way that he's going to be able to avoid surgery altogether? Because what we saw last year was that he had some kind of thing that he was dealing with, and he tried to put off surgery as long as he possibly could. And then trade rumors came up, and he, and then all of a sudden he was under the knife. Is this something that would he be better off maybe just going under the knife right now, getting surgery right now, recovering fully, and then coming back? Or is he actually better off completely recuperating and maintaining the stability of the way his ankle was meant to be in the first place?
It's really tough to say what he would be better off doing right now. I mean, first of all, we don't know exactly which ligament he tore in the ankle.
Yeah.
The ankle is made up of a bunch of ligaments.
Mm-hmm.
Usually when you see that type of ankle sprain, there's 3 ligaments that we worry about. And if he tore any of those, 9 times out of 10, we assume that that he's going to go under the knife and have surgery. There has to be something that we don't know as far as why they're putting off surgery for so long.
Mm-hmm.
Does he have the potential to 100% return to sport without surgery? injury, yes, he does have that. There is the potential for that, especially with where rehab is these days. So there is a reason they haven't written off his career yet. There is a potential for him to return to sport. And I've worked with patients before who have had this surgery before, and it is a tough recovery. It is really, really hard on the person. They're off their foot for a really long time.
There's so many moving parts down there.
Exactly. Well, and those, you know, the ankle moves in so many different directions, and it's accepting full body weight at the same time. And so when you've repaired a ligament and then introducing a patient back into their prior level of function, it takes a really, really long time. Now add that to a high level athlete that involves changing positions, jumping, sprinting, you know, putting all of these added stresses onto that ankle, you're doubling the amount of rehab that that person's going to need after that surgery.
Yeah, there are some sprained ankles that, one, some doctors have said that you were better off breaking the ankle, because of the extra strain that is put on those ligaments.
Right.
And then there are some sprained ankles that some basketball players have come back, pro basketball players. And these guys, by the way, have just completely different levels of pain tolerance. We're only the same species by name. But with some of these guys, they've said that it's taken a full year to recover, that they didn't really feel 100% on that ankle for a full year after the fact.
Well,
just because you have the mental restability in that and the trust in that ankle. It's the sprained ankles is no small thing, and that's why it just kind of gets back to why ever say 4 to 6 weeks? It was never realistic.
Yeah, the 4 to 6 weeks is just something that you tag on to almost any. I mean, we've talked about this before when we talked about LeBron's injury. We said 4 to 6 weeks, and I think it ended up being around that time. But what he had was a standard, you know, yes, it was his tendon. But he did have just a standard run-of-the-mill injury that you see in sports.
Yeah.
This is not a standard run-of-the-mill injury. So when I heard 4 to 6 weeks, I was like, what?
Yeah.
You know, like you said, I thought that 3 months made a little bit more sense, with especially if he's not having surgery.
Yeah.
You know, usually after somebody has surgery to fix this problem, I mean, you know, with this sport and the high level of it, I mean, you're out for longer than 3 months.
Yeah.
Because you're not walking on that foot without a boot on, I'm thinking probably almost up to 2 months.
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe they just want to get him back faster.
At this point, now that they have invested this much time in trying to recover without needing surgery, they're kind of pot committed, right? Because now if he requires surgery, that's a setback.
Yeah.
Now if he has to go in and go under the knife at this point, now you're talking about, the full recovery from not just the injury, but from the surgery.
Right.
I guess at this stage it makes sense to you know, kind of plow ahead and try to get by without going under the knife. But there's a bit of a risk involved, I think.
He's going to need a really good rehab team.
Mm-hmm.
It's all going to be on those rehab men and women that are working with him.
So you're saying that, like, LeVar Ball shouldn't take the lead on this one?
No.
big baller recovery?
No.
What would be the B word for that? Big baller. I don't even know.
I don't know.
Big baller Band-Aid.
Yeah.
All right, last question here before we get out of here. Somebody wants to know, as part of the mailbag, Whataburger or In-N-Out?
Oh, In-N-Out.
That's right.
100%. That's not even
a question.
That's not even a question.
The only reason people would say Whataburger is because they're from Texas and that's what they grew up on.
Right. And I've had both. And In-N-Out, 100%.
Yeah, I agree. This is why I married her. Well, thank you very much, Jen, for hopping on, especially on semi-short notice. But I appreciate that. I had a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
You had the right In-N-Out take. And I guess I'm going to record the rest of the... You don't want to sit down on the mailbag.
No, I'm good.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
And that was Jen. That was Dr. Jennifer Irwin. One day I'll learn her titles. She's way smarter than I am, though. So anytime I can get her on the show, I am going to. I hope you guys enjoy that information. It's tough, man. It's unfortunately, it looks like, and actually it's kind of ironic, really, when you think about it, that injuries have gotten in the way of so many things this year. They have gotten in the way of obviously the Lakers having actual success and making it into the playoffs, but now they have struck once again to ensure that the Lakers can't even get momentum heading into what's going to be a hugely important offseason. So we'll see how those things turn out. I'm going to get to a few of your questions here. What I'm going to do is I'm going to answer about half of the questions that we have here, maybe a little more than half. That way I can, if we get any more questions between now and Tuesday when Pete and I record, then, you know, we'll see. If there are any questions that you guys have left, if you guys know that you left a question and I didn't answer it so far, it's because it says Pete in it. And since it says Pete in it, I'm going to hold off on answering it until I actually have Pete. So here we are. All right, ready? First question comes from ZZABNA, ZZABNA. Hey, Anthony, love the show. With all the injuries the Lakers have endured this season, is it time to look at their training staff for not having these guys as healthy as possible? Or is it just bad luck that these injuries keep occurring? I think it's a little bit of both. I think what I would say is, one, like Lonzo's injury, turning an ankle, stepping on somebody's foot and turning an ankle, that's just bad luck. Brandon Ingram, like randomly developing a blood clot is bad luck. LeBron James slipped, right? And like these are things that it's just going to happen over the course of a season. It's... what concerns me a little bit is I don't know where the line, it's kind of an ambiguous line here, and I don't know where it starts between who to fault on the part of not getting guys back in time or in their regular time frames, or always either missing the timeline altogether and, you know, having somebody back. If you say it's 4 to 6 weeks and they come back at the very end of that 6 week, or if they miss it altogether, it's, you know, they're coming back in that 7 to 8 week range on a 4 to 6 week injury. I don't know who to fault there. I legitimately don't. I don't know enough to definitively talk on this subject in regards to that. Is that a problem with how they're managing the information, or is that a problem with the actual staff itself getting that player back in time? So it's hard to say there. So I want to say it's probably more on the part of those in charge of the information and releasing that information and having that information be realistic. That's who I would probably lean a little bit more towards, because I know more about that. That's the background that I come from professionally. Then I'm no doctor, right? So I think they have to really look at that. And look, what the problem here is that because of the way that they handle that information, it allows speculation to occur. It's like what my boss, when I was in public relations, told me, either you tell your story or somebody else is going to tell your story for you. And then you have no control over the story. And so like right now, because of the way information is being handled and because of the ambiguity that goes into those decisions, well, it allows people to speculate. If time after time after time after time these guys are coming back after the or late in the recovery timeline or after the recovery timeline, you're forced to wonder about the things that we're talking about here. Is it the training staff's problem? Is it the PR department's problem? If it is the PR department's problem, are they being told to do this kind of thing? One thing that matters a lot to organizations, especially professional organizations, sports organizations, is the resale ticket market. It's a way to show value, and if your ticket prices on the resale market are consistently high, that's a way to explain. See, look, no, there's still an audience that really wants to see this. And if you're always, again, I'm not saying this is, or I want to be clear here that I don't know if this is the case. I'm not even sure I think it's the case, but it's something that you're allowed to speculate about now because you don't know what's going into these decisions. And so back to if all of these guys are coming back and these optimistic timelines aren't being met, we have to ask why those timelines are being set. And on the resale market, like while LeBron was hurt, for example, right? If they just keep going day by, if they keep listing him as day to day, well, people might still buy a ticket just on the off chance that he comes back for that game, right? And same goes for Lonzo. If you say 4 to 6 weeks, well, then okay, maybe you might suffer in those 4 to 6 weeks, and people are not going to buy or pay as much to see Rajon Rondo lead a basketball team. But after that, you know, after that 4 to 6 week range, and you get back to that, you know, day to day kind of situation, well, then now all of a sudden those people might start buying tickets again and paying a little bit more for them, and then your average resale market price goes up, and again that's valuable to some of these professional organizations. I want to be absolutely clear. I don't know if that's actually what's going on there, but again, it's about the fact that I can speculate about it. We don't know these things. We don't know what's going into these decisions, and these decisions are being made. They're odd decisions in and of themselves, so it forces people to just kind of wonder what else might be going on. More on that, though, as we get into the offseason. Next question here comes from Devin Jan. Hey, I really love listening to the show every day. Keep doing what you're doing. I'll try. As long as David will have me, I'll keep doing this. Do you think that it is safe to say that Lonzo's injury cost him a chance at being in an all-defensive team? Thanks for taking the time. I do. He was heading in that direction. And then the other thing is we saw what the defense became with him out. He makes a huge impact on that side of the ball. Defense is tough because a lot of times during a game, most people are looking at the ball, right? But the vast majority of defense is actually being played off of the ball, right? 80%, if you think about it, just in terms of the people guarding the ball, on average, about 80% of defense is played away from the basketball. And that might even be a low estimate. And so with Lonzo and his ability to impact the game off of the ball defensively and the havoc that he can wreak defensively there, that really puts the Lakers in a better spot. And when you look at, you know, Rajon Rondo takes his spot in the starting lineup or for those point guard minutes, and he's legitimately awful on defense, you can see the impact that Lonzo can now point to and say, look, this is what they become while I was out. And so, yeah, I think had he stayed healthy, had he played 70-plus games, 75 games or so, he would have a legitimate case to make as a first-team all-defensive player. I'm willing to go that far. Next question here comes from, I got to scroll past one, Groove wants to know, or says, thank you and Harrison for, I think you meant Pete, for absolutely laying into the Lakers in the front office. You have said what is on a lot of our minds, well, at least mine. They do deserve a huge chunk of blame, and I really, really hope they learn from this season when putting together the team for next season. Thank you. Of course. Question. Before I get to the question, I want to make sure you guys know this. When I criticized the front office, when I showed concern for Magic Johnson as a hire, I was hoping to be proven wrong. I hope you guys know that. Pete talked on the last episode about what Magic Johnson means to him personally. To me, he means more even beyond basketball. My little brother, Andrew, is dealing with HIV, and Magic being so public in his fighting the disease and being so strong and just merely living right now makes him a hero to people who are also having to deal with that disease and the families of those people. And so when I was criticizing the process that led into Magic's hiring, and then after he was hired, how he was running the team and the decisions that he made, it sucks to do that. I hope you guys know it really sucks. I don't want to have to do that. I have to be honest, but I also don't want to have to do that because I'm criticizing and I'm being let down by somebody I legitimately consider a hero. So I hope you guys recognize, and I'm pulling for Magic this upcoming offseason. I want him to prove me wrong. I want him to make me look like an idiot. And if he makes me look like an idiot, guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to come on here and be an idiot. I'll say to everybody that I'm an idiot. So I'm hoping that's how this turns out. Anyway, back to the question. With this season being a frustratingly spectacular failure, is any silver lining you can find regarding the season going into this offseason? Mine is, at least LeBron is going to get plenty of rest and will hopefully come back next season rejuvenated, rested, and ready to give more effort than he did this year. Your thoughts? I think that's one way to look at it. I would mostly agree that some time off might actually help LeBron here. And I mean, he's played at least 100 games for 10 straight seasons. It's an insane amount of minutes. So getting a bit of an early break and not having to do that again there's a benefit there. Though I would much rather he have to put those extra miles on because I miss the playoffs and I miss the Lakers being in them. In terms of other silver linings, the other thing to keep in mind here with LeBron too is he's embarrassed. He has to be embarrassed. And if he is, then the hope is that, you know, he recognizes, all right, I goofed up. He's going to come back hopefully next year ready to prove to everybody that this season is an outlier and this isn't going to be the norm as he moves into the last phase of his career. So I think those are a couple of silver linings. And look, I think what we saw from Ingram, even though he got hurt, obviously is a bummer, but what we saw from Ingram, what we saw from Josh Hart, and to a bit of a lesser extent, Kyle Kuzma, when all the trade speculation was going on, I think that tells me that, yeah, they have a few winners there. And that's a big silver lining I think you can take into next offseason. So we'll see. Last couple questions here. From JMX763, hey, Anthony, love the show. I have learned a lot from listening. It's probably when Pete is on. Maybe I'm humping rainbows, but I think the Lakers can bounce back next year. Even if the Lakers miss out on trading for AD or landing Kawhi, KD, Clay, or Kyrie this summer, is there still hope? Can they build around LeBron, Bizo, Kuz, and Josh with Boogie, Vucevic, or Bledsoe? Bledsoe can't happen. He just got signed as a consolation free agent. Maybe they can add two or three lower-tier free agents such as Bogdanovich, Horford, Mirotic, Brogdon, Barnes, Green, or Bullock, or whatever. How do you think such a roster can do next year? I think that'd be a fine roster as you're talking about it. You know, if you just kind of fill out the roster and you start actually building a team, that there's value in that. But that's kind of missing the point. So the reason you hired Magic was so that you could A, get into the room, and B, blow away whoever it is he's talking to as a free agent. Whether that is the people you listed, the Clays, the Kyries, the Kevin Durants, like that's what you hired Magic Johnson for. And we know he's not very good on the margins. So if he isn't good at assembling a roster in the way that he thinks he knows how, right, by keeping as much cap space open and then finding a free agent in that way, then you're kind of sort of screwed, right? Because he's not very good on the margin. So, in theory, if they piece together a team, there's no way that if LeBron stays healthy and the Lakers' young core grows up a little bit, that they aren't competitive next year, injuries notwithstanding. But that's not quite what we signed up for. That's not what Magic and Pelinka were hired to do. Let's do two more here. Hi, Anthony. Love the show. Considering Majinka's failures, I find it hard to believe we'll get a superstar. So what do you do? What do you think about the following? Or what do you think about the Lakers shooting their shot at $17 million for 4 years of Nikola Vucevic, $20 million? So it's the same kind of question. And I get a lot of this question a ton, right? Where you, like, what kind of roster can the Lakers build if they fail? Look, there's plenty of time that we'll be able to talk about that kind of thing. But for right now, Magic and Pelinka have to live up to their promises. And if they don't, they have to deal with it accordingly. Magic already said that if he fails to bring the Lakers back, he's going to step down. you kind of have to if the Lakers strike out here, and then you're expecting Magic to piece together a team beyond that, I don't think he should have that opportunity. That's me being completely honest. If he strikes out and isn't able to land a second superstar in free agency, he should step down. That's what he said he was going to do. And if he, like I said, if he isn't able to do those big things for the roster, then what is he hired here for? Then he's just collecting a check. Last question here from Nick Batchelor. Hi, Anthony. I'm hating life right now. Was going to go to the last game of the season on a trip to California, but now not so excited. Has there been any team in NBA history who has been this far back six games, but have some way or somehow fought to make the playoffs, not giving up? Nick Batchelor in Honolulu, Hawaii. I'm sure some team has made a run at it, you know, at this stage, but you're fighting against math, and you're fighting against injuries, and you're fighting against the residue from that leftover in the locker room in terms of chemistry. So it's just I hope, you know, we'll see, but as you guys have seen, right? This the for one thing, the veterans have already quit. You can look at their plus minuses since the South Bay Lakers have started to play a larger role. And then the thing with the South Bay Lakers is that, yeah, they play hard and all that stuff, but at the end of the day, you need the talent to win some of these games, and they just don't, especially while the veterans don't care. That'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast, though. Thank you guys for tuning in. Thank you, Jen, for sitting in and bringing some actual intelligence to the show. That was nice. That'll do it, though, for this episode, and have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's, and I'll talk to you tomorrow. Oh, get those questions in for Wednesday's show.